Hotep, everyone. This is Michael M. Hotep, founder of the African History Network and host of the African History Network show. Hope everybody's doing well today. Today is Tuesday, February 6, 2018. And I want to share with you an interview that was done on Friday, February 2nd, 2018. I was a guest on the Cliff Russell show on 910 AM, the Superstation. And we were talking about, we were kicking off African American History Month, and we were talking about different aspects of our history. We took some calls from the callers as well. And I also talked about a lecture series I was doing that coming weekend on February 3rd and February 4th at Nandy's Knowledge Cafe, dealing with breaking the chains while we celebrate African American History Month, exposing the myths, and then the second day was the Light of Ancient Egypt, Awakens the African Mind. We have, visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com for all of my DVD lectures, the presentation I did, Breaking the Chains, while we celebrate African American History Month. It's available right now at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. It's a 3-hour presentation I did, and I deal with the origins of Black History Month, why it was created, what we need to do to make it relevant for today and the future. I deal with history of Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who is the founder, started out as Negro History Week in 1926. Very fascinating history. Dealt with dispelling myths in our history, like was the Black John Hanson president. Dealt with a number of different things in the presentation as well. So it's available right now at AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, and also all of my other DVD lectures are there. We have bundle packs available, great time of the year to purchase those. We have the 1804 documentary dealing with the history of the Haitian Revolution, and a lot more. I want to remind you to listen to the African History Network show Sundays, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 9:10 a.m. the Superstation. And we have podcasts of the shows at our website, also AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, and on Blog Talk Radio. So you can visit our website for that information also, okay? So here's the interview that Cliff Russell did with me. And we start out talking about Bacon's Rebellion of 1675 and 1676. In the colony of Virginia, and this dealt with the origins of using the term white as a racial designation in the British colonies. And lastly, if you want me to do a presentation for your group or organization, or if you want to interview me, email me at info@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, info@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Also, you can visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can email me through the website or call 313-462-0003, 313-462-0003.
And enslaved African people who united to fight against their common oppressors, because they were both being oppressed by the ruling class, the elite, things like this. Mm-hmm. And the rebellion was put down, but after that, then you had the ruling class to rethink it and say, well, wait a second, you know, we have to rethink this. So then they start using the term white to separate the poor indentured servants from the enslaved Africans, who they had more in common with.
Yes.
Because their position in the colonies was just right above the enslaved Africans.
Right.
Right. So this is where the concept of white, and there's a book called White Trash by is a white woman who Roland Martin interviewed, and the name of the book is called White Trash. I forgot her name. I actually bought the book, and she deals with Bacon's Rebellion in there also. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, African American History Month, one of the myths is that this is a month that white people gave us. Look, I don't know where you got that from. White people did not give us anything. This is something we created. We got to deal with Dr. Carter G. Woodson.
So Dr. Carter G. Woodson? I was talking about it.
Yeah, Dr. Carter G. Woodson. You know, I'm doing a 2-day lecture series this weekend in Nandy's Knowledge Cafe. This is one of the things we're dealing with, because we have to dispel the myths, okay? Mm-hmm. So it started out as Negro History Week in 1926. He was an educator. He not only taught in high schools, but he taught at Howard University. He was born in 1875 in Virginia. He was born 10 years after slavery ended, born the former slaves. He was an educated man. He graduated from Berea College with a bachelor's degree in liberal arts. Then he gets another bachelor's degree from the University of Chicago, okay, around 1907, because after he travels abroad and comes back to this country, he wants to get his master's from the University of Chicago, where they don't honor his bachelor's degree from Berea College, which is in Kentucky. So he has to get a bachelor's all over again. Mm-hmm. He competes a black bachelor's in a year, and then the following year he completes his master's, but he gets a PhD from Harvard in American history. He's the second African-American to get a PhD from Harvard, the first African-American of African slave descent, because you know Dr. W.B. Du Bois, when he got his PhD in 1895, he was born to free parents.
Yes.
Okay? So he realizes, since he's an educator, he realizes that our children and the adults don't understand their history, just as today. We can tell by some of the callers that call here on a regular basis.
Right.
Don't understand their history. Right?
Amen
so in 1915 was the 50th year anniversary of the Civil War ending and slavery ending. Right? So in 1915, you had a big convention that took place. I think it was in Chicago.
It was in Chicago.
Yeah. And this convention was a 3-week symposium that commemorated the accomplishments of African Americans over the past 50 years since slavery ended.
Yes.
Right? So because of this, he gets the idea to create an organization that would document, scientifically document and preserve the history and accomplishments of African Americans in this country, but also on the continent of Africa as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So September 9th, 1915, he and four other co-founders co-found the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. Okay? This was in Chicago. So this is something that we created. So this is the organization we created. They created the Journal of Negro History as well, which is a journal for our scholars to publish their works. They're going to create, he creates the Associated Publishers, Inc., which is a publishing company, because we were publishing our own textbooks mm-hmm. for our schools and for HBCUs, and then he used that publishing company to publish his books, his most famous book, Miseducation of the Negro,
yes.
Right? 1933. But in 1926, he creates Negro History Week, okay? And Negro History Week was never designed to be the only time of the year we study our history.
Right.
We've got it backwards. We know that June is Black Music Month. Nobody says June is the only time of the year you can listen to black music.
Right.
We've got it totally backwards. We got it totally backwards.
By the way, Mike Imhotep here. Our number is 313-778-7600. 313-778-7600. If you have any questions, calls, or comments. I have often said, Michael Imhotep,
yes.
that if you want to delve into black history, and really the total history of this country, you need to begin with The Miseducation of the Negro by Carter G. Woodson. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, or some other things?
You can start
you
there.
Before the Mayflower, I know some folks have mentioned Lerone Bennett's book as well.
Yeah, Before the Mayflower is a good one. Now, what I like to do is I kind of like to start out with books that are not as extensive. Before the Mayflower is about 500 pages.
Right.
Okay, so it's an excellent book, and in the back of the book, he has a chronology of history from about 1607 up until present time. But one good book for people to start with, you can start at different periods of time. One good book is called How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy. It's put out by the Nation of Islam Research Group. It's very, very thorough, very well researched. And that's it's a small book. It's something about 130 pages, but it's a small book in height. Another good book to start with is Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization by Tony Browder. Okay? And I know Tony. A lot of these scholars, I know them. I've interviewed them. This book, I think it's about 200 pages, but it has a lot of pictures in it. You don't need to have a PhD in anthropology or things like this to be able to understand the book. It's very easy to understand. Mm-hmm. And it takes you through ancient Egypt all throughout up to 1980, something like that, when it was written. Another good book by Browder is called Egypt on the Potomac. Egypt on the Potomac. Because this book deals with how the layout of Washington, D.C., is based upon ancient African principles coming out of ancient Egypt. How the layout of Washington, D.C. is actually a copy of the layout of ancient Egypt. And Browder does a... We actually in...
wasn't it Banneker?
Benjamin Banneker. Yeah, he was a surveyor, and he did the layout.
Yeah,
Banneker.
Okay.
And we know Banneker was a master astronomer, and we know it's really believed that Banneker was a descendant of the Dogon. It's believed that his grandfather, great-grandfather, was Dogon. We know Dogon were master astronomers, and they originally come from ancient Kemet, ancient Egypt. And you're going to have a migration starting around 400 B.C. because of an invading force, and they go in Central Africa, end up out in West Africa, and they're in Burkina Faso and Mali. Mm-hmm. We know the Dogon are master astronomers, and it was the Dogon who had knowledge of the Sirius A and Sirius B star system before European astronomers gained that knowledge, right? And then we look at, you have a XM radio station called Sirius, right? Which is, and the symbol is a dog with a star over its head, because Sirius is known as the dog star. Because it's in the constellation of Canis Major, which is the big dog, mm-hmm. All right? So when we study this history, this takes us all over the world, and you study different disciplines as well. So, Banneker is talked about in that book, Egypt on the Potomac. Mm-hmm. When you look at the Washington Monument, that's an ancient African symbol called a tekken. Okay, the Greeks call it an obelisk.
An obelisk, right.
Yeah, and that comes from the story of Osar, Aset, and Heru, who the Greeks called Osiris, Isis, and Horus. And mm-hmm. Dr. King in 1949, by the way, he wrote a paper. In the King papers, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote a paper when he was in the seminary in 1949 dealing with the influence of Osiris, Isis, and Horus, the first Holy Trinity, on Christianity. Mm-hmm. This is in the King papers. A lot of people don't even know this. Dr. King was very deep. You know, I hear people, Dr. King, I hear people talk about Dr. King. I could tell they never read any of his books and never studied them.
The thing I want to say about King, too, and we're all over the place, but I love it. Dr. King had much more courage and much more sacrifice
Absolutely.
Than people want to give him credit for.
Absolutely.
Once I came to understand the depth of his knowledge and his scholarliness, Dr. King, and I think I understand he was offered teaching jobs, professor jobs, mm-hmm. at major universities in this country. He could have sat back, chilled, took his Nobel Peace Prize, and made money off of that for the rest of his life.
Right.
And he refused to do so. He wanted to be and was compelled to be a man of the people, and it cost him his life.
Well, not only that, when he arrives in Montgomery, Alabama, in 1955, he had no plans of joining the Civil Rights Movement.
Right.
He was drafted. Right? He was drafted. Montgomery Improvement Association is formed because of to lead the Montgomery bus boycott, and E.D. Nixon and others there thought he was a good person to lead the Montgomery bus boycott because he was so new to Montgomery, he didn't have any friends and didn't have any enemies. He was an unknown.
Yes.
Okay? So he got drafted. He was only in the Civil Rights Movement 12 and a half years, assassinated at 39 years old, right? And he got drafted.
Right.
Okay. But he was committed to his principles.
And I understand some of those folks too who helped draft him did so because they said, I'm not putting myself in the crosshairs. If this thing don't work, I can get this new guy to get in trouble and I can keep doing what I was doing.
Well, it was very dangerous because Birmingham used to be called Bombingham because they bombed so many African Americans' homes.
Yes.
So we know the lawsuit of Browder versus Gale during the Montgomery bus boycott was filed February 1st, 1956. But 2 days before that, Dr. King's house was firebombed. Mm-hmm. Right, we know Rosa Parks ran out of Montgomery, Alabama, after the bus boycott by white supremacists. She comes up to Detroit, and Representative John Conyers hires her.
Right,
right. So when we study our history, see, a people's history and culture teaches them how to deal with the problems of the past in the present and the future to meet the needs of the community because things happen in cycles. So what we're dealing with today, this is not the first time we've dealt with white supremacy, racism, dealing with needing more jobs or what have you, mm-hmm. right? So we need to look at our history and see how did we deal with these problems in the past.
Let me take a quick call before we got to go to a break. Lawrence is on line one. Hey, Lawrence, thanks for calling. This is Black History Month. We're talking to historian Michael M. Motel.
Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Lawrence, how you doing?
And hello, Brother Michael Hotel. But my question is...
Yes, sir.
How did the Hebrews in 70 AD leave Jerusalem and Israel black and come back white? and I understood it and knew about it.
Right, right.
Identified these folk food in the United Nations.
Right, right.
In the United States and the servile secretaries who served the United Nations. Some served the United States, got up and walked out.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to know is when we talk about the diaspora,
thank you for
and the scattering about, we're not lost, we're scattered, and we talk about the scattering of the nation of Israel, and we call ourselves every name that our enemies have given us, and we was only given one name by the Most High, and that was Israel.
Mm.
We call ourselves Negro, we call ourselves black, we call ourselves African. How can we be Africans? Africa is not even the name of the continent. Africa is named after a Roman general.
That's not true. Right? Hey, let me help you out right there. Let me help you out right there.
And appreciate the call, Lawrence. Thanks for giving us a lot of good information.
Now, one, I don't mix biblical literature with religion with world history. Those are two entirely different things. One, two. People need to get a Latin English dictionary. You can get Cassell's Latin English Dictionary, 2002 edition, page 11. I don't know where this myth came from, okay, but Africa was not named after Publius Cornelius Scipio, a Roman general. First of all, study his family. His family's last name was not Africanus. His family's last name was Scipio. Mm-hmm. Two, go to the Latin language. Africanus means belonging to Africa, okay? When you study the history, Rome is fighting against Carthage. Okay, when you actually understand the word Africa, the prefix is Afri. The Afri were a group of black North African people in Algeria and Tunisia. Tunisia used to be called Carthage, mm-hmm. right? So when he kept, and you can go to Columbia Encyclopedia, which is online, look up Publius Cornelius Scipio, and it tells you there that he took the surname, S-U-R-N-A-M-E, the surname Africanus after he conquered the territory.
It was
referring to the Afri, okay, who are a group of black North African people in Algeria and Tunisia. He took his surname after the area he conquered. It was not named Africa because it was conquered by a Roman general.
The word Africa comes from the Afri.
It comes from the Afri. A-F-R-I. A-F-R-I.
Let us marinate on that for a second because we got to go to a break.
That's right.
We got the new break schedule.
Yeah, that's
we
right.
We have the irrepressible inimitable Mr. Brother Michael Imhotep in here.
I don't know about all that, but okay.
Oh, I'm telling the truth.
All right, man.
This is Black History Month. I can't think of anybody better to talk to about black history other than Michael Imhotep and you if you dial 313-778-7600. We'll be right back. This is 910 AM, the Superstation, the future of radio.
Okay, so we went to commercial break, and that was the first segment of the interview. But the book I was thinking of from Dr. John Henrik Clark, where he talks about the Afri. The name of the book is called African People in World History, African People in World History by Dr. John Henrik Clark. And it's a good introduction book, good beginner's book for people studying African-American history or any level, but for people who are new to studying our history, this is a good book they can start with. The book is about 92 pages. And on page 14 and 15 of his book, in the introduction, he talks about the Afri. And he says, the Nile Valley's first age of high cultural grandeur lasted until the eve of the Christian era. Some aspects of it survived the Greek and Roman occupation of parts of North Africa. After the rise and decline of Greek civilization and the Roman destruction of the city of Carthage, the Romans organized the conquered territories into a province they called Africa, a word derived from Afri, A-F-R-I, Afri, the name of a group of people about whom little is known. This was a new name because previously all dark-skinned people were called Ethiopians. Since the Greeks referred to Africa as Ethiopia, which means the land of the bird-faced people. Now, Ethiopia is a Greek word. Proper term for it would be Abyssinia. A more proper term, Abyssinia. But Ethiopia is a Greek word coming from Ethiops. He goes on to say, after 300 AD, new states and eventually empires began to appear in inner West Africa, which the Arabs later called the Western Sudan. The best known of these states were Ghana, Mali, and Songhai. Their collective lifespan was more than 1,000 years, but these West African empires were in decline on the eve of the slave trade. Okay, he means on the eve of the beginning of the transatlantic slave trade, which is early 1440s. Okay. All right. So that is an excerpt from pages 14 and 15 of African People and World History by Dr. John Henry Clark. Okay. So let's go back to the second part of the interview.
Dr. Michael Imhotep, I just granted a doctorate to you, Brother Imhotep, because you deserve it. Yeah, He's in the studio with us. Hey, before we go any further, get in the first of, I'm sure, many shameless plugs to come. I'm just joking. Hey, when and where is your lecture coming up?
Yeah, well, I'm doing a two-day lecture series this weekend at the new Nandy's Knowledge Cafe, located at 71 Oakman Avenue in Highland Park, Michigan. For those who don't know, Highland Park is right inside of Detroit. It's taking place Saturday, February 3rd, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, February 4th, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And the first day we'll deal with breaking the chains. Why we celebrate Black History Month, exposing the myths, some of the things I've talked about. I got a lot of other stuff in store. We'll deal with the history of African American History Month, why it was created, what we need to do to make it relevant for today and the future. We'll deal with who was here in this country before Native Americans came into existence. We'll dispel some other myths, like why the Black John Hanson wasn't president, a lot of other things like that. Then the second day, Sunday, February 4th, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., we'll deal with the Light of Ancient Kemet Awakens the African Mind. The Light of Ancient Egypt Awakens the African Mind. Visit our website. Information is at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can also call 313-462-0003. 313-462-0003.
When one begins the study of one's own history, I'm talking about specifically for African Americans.
Sure.
What are some of the myths that we have to overcome about ourselves? And you know what I'm talking about.
Because right.
It's not like I wasn't told anything about myself.
Right.
Some of the things I was told about myself simply were not true or were misleading. I'm sure you run into folks who have those issues all the time. And I'm curious what kinds of things do we think or have learned about ourselves that maybe we need to take a second look at.
Well, one of the big myths is that our history first started in this country August 20th, 1619, when that Dutch warship brought 20-some-odd Africans to Jamestown, Virginia, even though that did happen. It was actually an English warship as opposed to a Dutch warship, even though that did happen. Mm-hmm. Even when you look at the enslavement of African people, the Spanish were taking Africans into the territory called South Carolina in the 1520s. About 100 years before that. That's not even talked about. But African people, we've been here in this land going back at least 51,700 years, even before Native Americans came into existence. So there's so many myths. And when our children learn that their history starts in this country, conquered and shackled and chained, conquered by Europeans, it automatically gives them a subconscious inferiority complex.
Yes.
Okay? So you're automatically starting at negative 10, trying to dig your way out. All right. Another myth is that Columbus discovered America. Well, a lot of people know that he didn't discover America because they say there were already people there. Well, that's one reason. But the other reason why, because he never came to the land we call it. He never came to the land we call the United States of America. Right. So you look at where he goes on his four voyages. First voyage, August 3rd, 1492. He sets sail in the Nina, the Pence, and the Santa Maria. He goes into the Caribbean. He goes into Central America, South America. He's in Cuba, Haiti, Puerto Rico, Honduras, places like this. He never comes to the land we call the United States of America.
Right.
Okay. So why in Detroit they have a statue of Christopher Columbus, I still can't figure that out. That makes no sense. He was a master of genocide. Why? He never even came here.
I was about to say, when you read his writings, we're led to believe that he was an explorer and a discoverer. Mm-hmm. He was a conqueror and a murderer.
He's a conqueror and a murderer and a con man, like the one we have in the White House.
Wow.
Yeah.
Christopher Columbus and Donald Trump. We'll have to talk about that sometime. Yeah. what are the impacts of having bad information? And I could talk about this all day, but I'd love to get your perspective, Mike.
Sure.
What are the impacts of having bad information about yourself, particularly on your children as they grow up? You talked about starting off in the hole,
right,
feeling that you're inferior.
Right.
But there's some other impacts that I have seen on our young people.
Well, you know, what you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you and get away with is based upon what you think about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What you think about yourself is based upon what you have been taught about yourself. What you've been taught about yourself is based upon everything you've read, heard, and seen about yourself. So if our history and culture had no value, it would not have been taken away from us. It was taken away from us because it was very powerful.
powerful, and your history and culture gives you your foundation. It gives you your VIPs, your values, your interests, and your principles. And this influences your worldview. It gives you your cultural paradigm that you see reality through. It influences your economic empowerment and your political empowerment. So when you have bad information, you make stupid decisions. Okay, so this is, and this oftentimes is what we're operating based upon. Right. So it's extremely important, and in every ethnic group in America, for the most part, they have their history and culture intact, and they use that to fight for scarce wealth, power, and resources.
Interesting. Another question I'm going to ask, and we're going to go to the phone line. Sure. Number is 313-778-7600, by the way, folks. 313-778-7600. I want to get into this whole concept of self-image.
Okay.
Specifically, I grew up in a very, very colorized black community, or color-conscious black community.
Right.
If you were light-skinned, if you had straighter hair, you had favor. You had advantage.
Right.
If you were a light-skinned black girl with straight hair, all the brothers loved you.
Mm-hmm.
If you was a light-skinned brother with wavy hair, all the girls loved you, and everybody else got the leftovers once those had been picked through.
Right.
But where did that come from? How is it that the image of the white European became a standard of beauty for us?
It came from white people. It came from white supremacy.
White people didn't say, hey, let me slow down. I started to make a statement. I don't know if that's true.
Okay.
I know that whites gave preference to lighter skinned blacks, and that's because they was half their kids in many instances. You know, that's how they got light.
Right.
But how did we take that on ourselves? How did we all of a sudden start treating ourselves that way? White people didn't tell us, you treat each other based on color, even though they did. Is that where we got it from?
It's based upon the way they treated those, and it's based upon the media. So based upon the way oftentimes they treated those African Americans who were fairer, lighter skin, who had wavy hair, straighter hair, things like this. So it's important to understand that racism is a system of advantage and privilege distributed based upon race. Racism comes out of the concept of white supremacy, and it's designed to preserve genetic white survival. So racism has nothing to do with not liking people, calling people racial epithets, things like that. People have it totally confused. That's bigotry.
Right.
Okay? Racism is a power structure. So if you go back to 1638 in the colony of Maryland, you had a doctrine called the Doctrine of Exclusion. The Doctrine of Exclusion stated that Negroes should never be permitted to enjoy the fruits of white society. It's later going to be expanded to state that Negroes should be relegated to a non-compensated, non-competitive managed workforce for the comfort building of white society. So you're going to have this, you have things like this encoded into the laws, okay?
Yeah, it was legislated.
It was legislated. Yeah. You're dealing with public policy.
Yes.
Public policy has been kicking our behinds for at least over 246 years in this country, 350 years, whatever it is. Public policy has been kicking our behind. So this is why we have to understand law. So, and then you have the law, and then you have the distorted images fed to us through the media, okay? Whether it's the minstrel shows, going back to 1828 to 1829 with T.D. Rice, Thomas Dartmouth Rice, who was a white man who created the Jim Crow character. And he's known as the father of the minstrel shows. And he puts on blackface and tattered torn clothing and adopts a southern dialect. And it's designed to lampoon and make fun of African people. This is during slavery. Well, the minstrel shows become the most popular form of entertainment in the country.
Right.
Not just in the South, but also in the North. Right? So when you have books, when you have children's books like 10 Little N-Word Boys,
yes.
When you have cartoons and caricatures and things like this that dehumanize African Americans, this comes out of an ideology of white supremacy that did not always exist, by the way.
But
also.
We were affected by, let me tell you a couple things that came to mind. One, I was watching a documentary about Bob Marley.
Okay.
And they were talking to Rita Marley, his widow.
Yeah.
And she was talking about how when she first met Bob, she wasn't real crazy about him because he was light, and how all the women, all the girls back then wanted the darkest man they could find. And I thought, what a concept. That's the absolute opposite.
In Jamaica, though.
In Jamaica,
yeah.
That's the absolute opposite of what has happened in this country.
Right. Well, because in Jamaica, they were allowed more to keep their culture. See, in this culture, in this country, for the most part, our history and culture was stripped away from us. In Jamaica, they were more allowed to keep their culture, and you're dealing with You're really dealing with the propaganda of the media, right, and not having the history and culture to teach you to love your dark skin, to love your African features, mm-hmm, things like this. And then, you know, if you look at Malcolm X, for instance, right, and you go back to like the 1930s, mm-hmm, things like this, and the brothers are wearing the conk hairstyles, and you got Cab Calloway, right, and things like this,
right?
And they're doing this, they may not consciously think that they're trying to imitate Europeans, but this is what's taking place. They right. might kind of, and, right. and if you watch the Malcolm X movie, they're putting lye on their hair, which is burning their scalp, man, to straighten their hair.
When I was a kid, I sat in the basement, mm-hmm, and saw some cousins of mine conk their hair.
Right.
And they went through the exact same procedure.
Right, exactly. So what happens is when the entertainers start doing something, right, and the women like it, oh my God, then all of a sudden, what used to be crazy, right, now that David Ruffin has it, right, now everybody wants to do it, because all the women passing out looking at David Ruffin. Okay. Exactly. So when the entertainers start embracing something like that, because entertainers are oftentimes change agents, right? Right? Either good or bad.
Right.
Okay? So when they embrace this and it gets accepted by the mass, then it gets accepted by the opposite sex.
Yes.
Then it gets adopted.
Something else that I came across recently, too. I was going through an old issue of Ebony magazine.
Okay.
And there was a huge ad there for Nadnola.
Yeah.
Which will lighten your skin. And I think the ad, mm-hmm, said, great things happen to fair-skinned girls.
Yeah.
And I looked at that and thought about that and said, oh, my God, this is in a black publication.
Right.
And black folks are essentially demeaning themselves.
Absolutely.
Putting themselves down. And so I'm still at a quandary as to how in the world we allow that to become our standard of beauty.
Well, when you don't know who you are, you'll imitate who you've been taught to be. Okay, when you don't understand who you are, when you don't understand your history, you'll imitate. So these images are shown to you. You're shown to imitate your oppressor, to be like this. If you can get the light-skinned girl, you know, you'll get the light-skinned girl when you acquire more a higher-paying job, you acquire a degree or something like this. You have things like the brown bag test. Mm-hmm. You have organizations. The blue vein test that to keep darker-skinned people out. When you look at some of your HBCUs, even though HBCUs are valued, right? When you look at some of the origins of some of the HBCUs, a lot of them were founded by white people. But also, some of them, like Howard, you know, is going to be the lighter-skinned people who originally could go, oftentimes, mm-hmm, and is going to be the ones who were oftentimes the offspring of interracial relationships,
yes,
as well.
Yes.
Oftentimes, those were white politicians, white senators, things like this, mm-hmm, right? So when you study this history, you'll see this taking place. But this is all designed around the allocation of wealth, power, and resources into the hands of the dominant white society or those who do the bidding of the dominant white society.
A very special guest, Michael Imhotep. We have I've talked long enough. Let me get on the phone lines where we've got Harold on the line. Harold is online. Hey, Harold, thanks for calling. You're on with Michael Imhotep.
Hey, how you doing there, Cliff?
Hey, how's it going?
Hotep.
Hey, how you doing, Harold?
Well, it's great to hear you again, Hotep. I'm the gentleman who had called right before you were going off when Walter called.
Okay.
You kind of shut him up.
Okay, man. Let's not mention the mentally brain dead, but go ahead.
I
think he's on the line holding on right now, actually.
You can keep holding.
Oh, he is. Oh, my goodness. I can't wait. But this, my original topic was about this Nunes memo, but I'm going to bypass that because we're talking
it's
about
a dud.
Now.
Yeah, and Michael Imhotep is probably qualified to talk about the Nunes fake memo, too. But
yeah, it's
go
a
right
dud.
Ahead, my friend.
Go ahead.
What I'm going to get to, and I did ask you this question, if you remember, in regards to Africa, when I talked about the black slave wars between the different African tribes in Africa when they were selling each other to the white man on the waters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what difference do you see in that than you see now modernly when you talk about the different gangs? Everything's about money, because back then it was about money.
Mm-hmm.
And money and goods. But even now, when you talk about the different gangs and the different organizations, and it's as if we're so divided, we're conquered, and we're just steadily talking history, we're talking this and that, but yet we don't have a therefore. Therefore, what do we do right now as a people to move forward? And before, if you remember, when you just talking about hair, right? Mm-hmm. When they were doing their hair processing, but the, that song, mm-hmm. Say Aloud, I'm Black and I'm Proud.
Right.
Those businesses went out of business because Afros came in and they went out.
So which businesses went out of business?
Talking about the conk business.
Galvanize our young people, uh-huh. Galvanize our community, no matter if you're Republican, Democrat, that we're working towards helping each other, and sometimes you have to be on all fronts. So I can't speak against Walter or Wayne Brady and Kerry, but if they're coming from a point of view to help all of us, then we need different people in those different tents. But if you're speaking to the point that this is
who is all of us?
You mean all black folks? When you say that somebody who can help
black folks, okay, in a different tent.
Yes. Okay.
So, in as much as we may feel for a particular tent, but if you're doing it as a medium to help, except right. just yourself, then I understand that. But if you're just there just right. because as you say, you don't have any facts or you don't have any behind you, then you're hurting everyone, even yourself.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Harold, I appreciate your call. No, you made some good points. I'm going to jump in first, and I'm going to let Mike Imhotep say that. Mm-hmm. First of all, and I won't even mention any names, mm-hmm. but those black folks who walk lockstep with the Republican Party,
right.
I'm sorry, you cannot convince me that they have love of self. Anytime that you support a party that openly, knowledgeably has used a Southern strategy, mm-hmm. has used blatant racism, has used all types of divisive tactics based on race.
We're doing it right now.
That's what I'm talking about. Then you can't tell me you love black people too, and
right.
you're for black people. I just happen to be a Republican. I think that there's a contradiction.
Now, there's some black Republicans that I know and like. Dr. William Picard is one of them, okay? Dr. Bill Picard.
I like him too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I cannot understand mm-hmm. any self-respecting right. black person.
Right.
being involved with a candidate who blatantly used racism to get elected
right.
or a party that has decades of employing a Southern strategy
right.
to win races.
And you have some black Republicans, Michael Singleton is one of them. He got more backbone after he got fired by the Trump administration, by the way. But Michael Singleton is one of them who, you know, denounces the voter suppression tactics, things like this. So you have some, but you got some other ones like Bruce Lavelle, Pastor Dale Scott. You got some of these other sycophants
right.
out here who just turned a blind eye.
Right. Well, they're in it for the money.
Well, they're some of the right. same ones who would have turned in Harriet Tubman. That's why she had to carry a gun.
Because your original question was, therefore, what do we do now? And I only advocate that black folks do
mm-hmm.
three things.
Mm-hmm.
One, know and understand your history.
Mm-hmm.
Two, love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And three, come together to unify. Because if you know your history and you love yourself, when you come together, you will do the right thing. That's my thought. That has been my belief for a long time. I'm sure Michael Imhotep has a more elaborate answer than that.
Yeah, your history and culture gives you your VIPs, your values, your interests, and your principles, very important. And then you have the economic empowerment component so that we become the number one employers of our people, just like every other ethnic group in this country. So in 2007, we had 1.9 million African-American-owned businesses. In 2012, we had 2.6 million. Today, it's probably 3 million. We know that African-American women are creating businesses at 6 times the national average. We have to continue and expand the support of these businesses, but also understand these are the ones most likely to employ our people as well. And then also the political component is extremely important. So not only do we have to engage in economic guerrilla warfare and redistribute the pain through targeted, sustained economic withdrawal mm-hmm. strategies to those doing harm against us, right, like the Fox News Network. But the other thing is because if you understand history, you understand that public policy has always kicked our behind.
Yes.
Okay? And during the Civil Rights Movement, African Americans understood this. This is why they fought for a Civil Rights Act of 64. This is why they fought for a Voting Rights Act of 65. And not only were they fighting for that legislation, but they were fighting to break down the walls of Jim Crow and also
yes.
to attack the violence that was inflicted upon them to maintain the Jim Crow system. Okay? So when you have the breaking down of the Jim Crow system, you're also attacking the racial violence being inflicted upon you. So because we understand that and we look at what the Republicans are doing largely, and that's the problems with some Democrats, but largely 95% of these negative policies are coming from Republicans. If the laws and policies are kicking your behind, then we have to master and engage in political self-defense.
Right.
This goes way beyond voting. We have to understand how politics impacts every aspect of our life, understand how to disarm them of that weapon that they're using against us and use it against them. So we need to understand the law better than they understand the law.
Right. And Mike, if Hotep specified economic entrepreneurship and coming together and politics, I'm saying if we have self-love and self-awareness, that stuff will come.
That's the foundation. Yeah.
You have to understand yourself.
Yeah, you have to understand those different levels. Yeah. Then we have to also continue to support African-American media, African-American-owned media, and media that targets us and does it in a positive way and gain control of more media. Because what was taking place right now is a gentrification of the media airwaves across the country. If we look at Sinclair Media, the reason why the TV show Underground was canceled was because WGN, which is part of the Tribune Media conglomerate, they were bought by Sinclair. Okay. Sinclair bought about 200 TV stations and turned them into little mini Fox News stations.
Yes.
So they're very right-wing leaning, and then they're required to run commentaries favorable to the Trump administration at least 9 times a week, and the person they have doing it is Boris Epstein, who was one of the biggest sycophants, one of the biggest behind kissers and liars in the Trump campaign.
That's why he's in that position.
Lying
is a prerequisite. Let me get back to our phone lines where, let me see, I think Robinson is on line 3. Hey, Robinson, thanks for calling. You're on with Michael M. Hotep.
Cliff.
Yes.
In 1970, I was down there in Fort Worth, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And they celebrated Juneteenth Day down there like it was a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Slaves down there.
Juneteenth, yeah.
Yeah.
And my brother asked me, said, man, where you get that from?
Mm-hmm.
I said, man, I've been reading my history, man.
Right.
You know what, Robinson, I'm glad you brought that up, and I appreciate the call. Could you explain Juneteenth Day to the listeners who don't know what that is, Mr. Imhotep?
Yeah, well, Juneteenth is the commemoration of June 19th, 1865 in Galveston, Texas, which, according to reports, was the last, this was the last group of enslaved African Americans to find out that they were free.
Yes.
Okay? Largely because of the Emancipation Proclamation that said. But what happens is, as they go through, during the Civil War, after the Emancipation Proclamation, as the Union troops go through these Confederate areas, right, and take control of these areas, they freed the enslaved African people. So, and there are various theories on why, because the Civil War officially ends June 2nd, I think it's June 2nd, 1865, right? So they're going to find out after that, all right? So there's some theories into why these were the last to know. One theory is that the plantation owners there in Texas wanted to get another year of work out of them for harvesting the crops, things like this, right?
Well, and Galveston is like an island located off of Houston, so
yeah,
physically it would be more difficult for news and people to get there.
Yeah, but what happens is that you have a national Juneteenth organization,
mm-hmm.
and Juneteenth is celebrated. Now, as more African Americans moved out of the South during the Great Migration, Juneteenth started to be celebrated less and less.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but you have people who still celebrate the day all across the country.
Right. Do you celebrate it, by the way?
I celebrate Juneteenth some.
Right.
It's important to deal with the history of the Civil War and you know, deal with the 13th Amendment, deal with it. Just understand that history. But I think it's something that we should celebrate, but tie it to the larger history also.
Let's see if I can sneak another call or two in here. Let's get William from line one on. Hey, William, thanks for calling. You're talking to Brother Michael M. Hotep.
Very informative show. Look, I just want to say that the first Before the Mayflower that I purchased was by J.E. Rogers. It was in color. And, of course, I let it out to relatives and it destroyed. Dennett, I got his book too, and a lot of his references of data in his book, he referenced J.E. Rogers. And so Dennett was not the first one to write Before the Mayflower. Mm-hmm. J.E. Rogers wrote it. It was in a 8.5 by maybe 12 by, you know, it's a large book, and it was in color. And I lent it out to my grandchildren, and of course, it was, they lost it. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows where it's at now, right?
And I wish I could get hold of that, because when he died, all of his works he left to his wife, and she took them to a museum in New York. And that's the last I heard of it. I got a slew of his books.
Mm. Thanks for sharing that, William. I appreciate that. I see Mother Hotep on his computer taking notes. And
thanks for calling. Yeah, I'm familiar with J.E. Rogers, actually. I've talked to William before also.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Let's get right back to the phone lines. Appreciate you sharing that. I believe it is Terrence who's on line 5. Hey, Terrence, thanks for calling. You're on with Michael Imhotep.
Hey, Cliff, how you doing?
Good.
How's it going, man?
Man, it's Titans going to go ahead and get in that tournament, right?
You know what, man? They play against IUPUI tonight. I'm broadcasting the game at around 7 o'clock. And if they are going to turn around their fortunes this season, I think tonight is the night that they need to get started. I'm optimistic that they will try to make a move tonight, finally.
Okay. Okay, Cliff, I respect your show, but I'm going to say one thing about the Mr. What's his name?
Mr. M. Hotel.
You just call me Michael.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to say one thing.
Go ahead.
You remind me of my man, Django, the butler.
Steven? Why would you say that, man? Oh, I think he hung up.
He probably did, because he knew I was going to blast him. Don't waste time with people like him.
Well, I mean, I take all callers, but I mean...
No, I'm not saying don't take his call. I'm saying don't waste time.
I can't...
responding to that type of nonsense.
You are probably...
That's why he ran.
You're probably the most...
Because he knows I'll expose him as a fraud. Person, that's why he ran.
So, anyway, appreciate the call. Appreciate Michael being here. Let's take one more call before we run out of time. Mm-hmm. And I believe Ronald...
He doesn't even know the difference. He doesn't even know what Uncle Tom is. Because Uncle Tom was the hero.
Hey, gentlemen.
He doesn't even understand history. Man. Go ahead.
What's going on, Brother Ron?
Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, good afternoon. Good afternoon to both of you. Look here, Cliff, to your question and to both of your questions.
Go ahead.
Where do we go from here? I just want to add one caveat. Mm-hmm. We cannot forget to teach our young our history and our culture.
Right.
We are going to be gone at one point in time. So our youngsters must continue to learn our culture, must continue to cultivate our culture, must continue to learn our history and move that down through the ages. That's where I'm at with that. Along
with
the
3 points. Absolutely.
Ronald, I thank you on the money. I appreciate the call a lot, my friend. We are just about out of time. Before we go any further, Mike,
yes,
and Motel.
Yes, sir.
When are you going to be giving those two lectures?
This Saturday and Sunday, February 3rd, February 4th. Saturday, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the new Nandy's Knowledge Cafe, 71 Oakman Avenue in Highland Park, Michigan, right off of Hamilton. Free event, donations accepted. The first day, we'll deal with breaking the chains. Why we celebrate Black History Month, exposing the myths. And then the second day, we'll deal with the light of ancient Egypt awakens the African mind. For more information, visit AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can also call 313-462-0003, 313-462-0003. And I'll be on live Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the African History Network show. We're on Sundays. I'll be here live Sunday night also.
How should we spend our Black History Month?
I think, you know, studying our history, appreciating the fact that we're still here, understanding our accomplishments, understanding our failures, not just in this country, but also studying our history on the continent of Africa and throughout the diaspora as well. It was never designed to just deal with our history from 1619 up to the present in this country also. And teach this to our children. You know, there was a joint study from the University of Pittsburgh and Harvard University. We'll talk about this some Saturday, that dealt with how when parents deal with racial socialization and teach their children about their history and take them to events, things like this, helps their children excel academically. It also helps to offset the negative effects of discrimination and racism. Mm-hmm. Helps build positive self-esteem in their children. So there are documented studies that talk about the importance of teaching our children their history also.
Right. And that applies to white children as well, does it not?
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Carter G. Woodson felt that the history of African Americans should be taught in every school across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not just African American schools,
because he largely believed, and he's correct, that racism and bigotry largely comes from people not understanding about history and operating based upon stereotypes and myths.
I had a white friend, still have a wife, still a friend of mine, but I remember we talked years ago, and he said that the white guys who have a greater understanding of black history and thus a greater comfort around black people are the ones who excel exponentially in this country and in this world, because there's a lot of hang-ups that they avoid by not being entrenched in false or misinformed history.
Well, yeah, and then you have a lot of white people, especially a lot of poor whites, who are manipulated by a lot of those in power and divided because of racism. A lot of them vote Republican, and then their the policies of the Republicans screw a lot of poor whites that voted for them because they voted out of cultural anxiety and wanted to keep resources away from African Americans.
We've got to make our country great again.
Yeah, because they're operating based upon myths. Absolutely.
Brother Imhotep, tell us one more time how folks can get in touch with you.
AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. If you want me to do a presentation for your group or organization, you can email me through the website or email me info@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com or call 313-462-0003 also.
Always love having you, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me again, man.
February,
you come back soon.
February got a lot of days in it, and so we got to bring you back.
Yeah, got to bring you back, man.
Black History Month, but I celebrate it all year long.
Oh, so absolutely, absolutely.
We will have you back. All right, Brother Michael Imhotep, I got to get out of here. I'll remind you again, I'll be back on the air tonight just before 7 o'clock, the University of Detroit Mercy at home as they take on IUPUI, game time 7, broadcast time around 6:50, and I'll have that for you. In the meantime, Spud's coming in. I'm going to get out of his way. I don't care how much you know. Until I know how much you care. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Much, much love, Miss Sharice, and I'm out of here. This is 910 AM, the Superstation. Oh, by the way, thank you, Rachel. This is the future of radio.
All right, got to get out of here.